What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Lights out in Washington on Christmas Eve as congressmen and women of all faiths and persuasions head home to district and family. But what a lame duck that wasn't. A food safety bill passed, a nuclear treaty, 9/11 benefits, and here's the president signing and celebrating the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
I say to all Americans, gay or straight, who want nothing more than to defend this country in uniform. Your country needs you, your country wants you, and we will be honored to welcome you into the ranks of the finest military the world has ever known.
They were bipartisan votes. Not everybody liked it. Arizona Senator, Republican John Kyle.
Taking a lame duck session to jam so many things through, frequently without an opportunity to provide amendments, or when there are amendments, to simply have them all shot down without, I believe, adequate consideration.
And deluge and mudslide in California. Here's San Bernardino's Karen Hernandez standing in the rain with a roaring river, she says, in her house.
I had a roaring river in my living room off of the downstairs. I got nothing left, nothing.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable on the day before Christmas with Chrystia Freeland, global editor-at-large for Thomson Reuters, Jonathan Carl, senior political correspondent for ABC News, and On Point news analyst Jack Beatty. You can join the conversation. What did you make of that lame duck, mighty duck whirlwind in Congress? What's your holiday wish for the economy, for military families, for the world? And you can join us at our website, onpointradio.org. I should say thousands do. Here's a holiday shout-out to just some who make it smart and lively all the time. Ellen Dibble, Peter Nelson, Brandstad, William Brett, F. William Bracey, Corey Flo, and Dave, Jeff, Richard, and many, many more online. Bless you. That is not to forget our Facebook gang, where we hit 10,000 fans yesterday. You can get the early word on upcoming shows at Facebook/onpointradio. The same for Twitter, where you will see our money quotes and show updates, tweet, tweet. But wow, what a week. What a lame duck Congress. Jonathan Carl, Chrystia Freeland, Jack Beatty, it's great to have you all here. Jonathan, what happened in there? How did it become so productive?
Well, you know, I've got to tell you, a lot of the reporters that cover the Hill were openly mocking Harry Reid's contention that he was going to do all of this stuff when you know, after the election, he went through the list of all the things that they were going to accomplish.
Yeah, right. That'll happen.
Yeah, exactly. But what happened? I mean, really, this was the White House. This was the president charging forward with that tax deal, doing it over the objections of certainly House Democrats and a lot of Senate Democrats. And saying that once the deal was struck with Mitch McConnell, it wasn't going to change. He wanted to do it. That left time to do all this other stuff.
That was really the
key moment.
So the White House broke that logjam, and they broke it early, and on came the deluge of action. I mean, there was a lot of drama along the way. Here's President Obama at a press conference on a Wednesday before flying off to Hawaii, touting the progress of the lame duck session, saying there's still work to do on issues like the deficit and DREAM Act, but here he is.
I think it's fair to say that this has been the most productive post-election period we've had in decades. And it comes on the heels of the most productive 2 years that we've had in generations. That doesn't mean that our business is finished.
No, nor does it mean it's going to be the same when things come back for the next Congress with a Republican House. Here's Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina calling what happened in the lame duck session capitulation, but he admitted that Harry Reid and the president had worked effectively on their agenda.
We did a lot of policy changes in the lame duck, I think inconsistent with a major change in power. But that's what amazes me, and that's why I take my hat off to Harry. And when people say President Obama had a great 2 weeks, they're absolutely right. I'm the first one to, even though I don't like what happened, I do give them credit.
We'll look at the details of what got passed, but Chrystia Freeland, was that it? Sort of a moment of voting, a few votes across the aisle, enough to make things happen, and that's all done next year, or something else?
Well, I hate to be all bah humbug, but yes, okay. I do think that's the case. And I think that we need to be careful not to assume that because there was this, you know, incredible effectiveness of the White House, of Harry Reid, that that is going to translate into next year. I think that what we're going to be looking at is something much more similar to the kind of hyper-partisan environment we saw while the tax deal was being crafted. I think these Republicans are really much more ideological than the previous crew. And where we haven't seen the Democrats really winning is on the economy and on taxes. And that's going to be the real issue next year. And I think it's going to be very, very hard for the White House to make progress there.
Well, we'll look at this strange...
Sorry to be so bleak. I apologize. It's Christmas Eve. I want to say something optimistic. So.
There's more to come, but we will look at this strange, nearly forgotten beast while we've got it, Jack Beatty. Bipartisanship, at least enough of it to get these things through. And as Jonathan Carl says, it kind of goes back to that hotly debated, within Democratic Party circles, tax compromise.
There's no question about it. I mean, it would have been war to the knife if that hadn't gone through. And once it passed, Senator McConnell didn't seem all that keen about the rest of the agenda, and certainly he voted against it. But the logjam was broken, and out came the reforms. And it was, you know, the president said truly that it was a good day for America when he repealed "Don't Ask, Don't Tell," and that fits into such an American tradition. You know, there's our first African American president affirming the application of rights to new categories of Americans who've not had them, affirming what G.K. Chesterton called the American Creed, one, he said, set forth with theological lucidity in the Declaration of Independence, that people are created equal, that they do have equal rights, and that this American Creed continues to haunt us as the standard to which we need to aspire. And the president, I think, put that very well. And also, when he mentioned his disappointment with the failure of the DREAM Act, he said, that's not who we are. We're not a nation that denies citizenship or the chance to earn citizenship to the child to the children of undocumented immigrants.
There were tears on the Senate floor as Mitch McConnell broke down, saying goodbye to Senator Judd Gregg during this lame duck. Angry words between Harry Reid and John Kyle. We heard him of Arizona. Senator Bernie Sanders, Vermont, with that 8.5-hour-long speech about the state of the nation. Here's old-school Republican Richard Lugar, Indiana, dean of foreign policy in the Congress, really, with his remarks after the big nuclear treaty, the New START treaty, finally passed in the Senate.
I join the chairman in rejoicing for not only the American people and the security of our country, but likewise for people all over the world who count upon our leadership, our ability to work in a bipartisan way when it's in our national interest and in the interest of world peace.
So Senator Lugar liked it. He's been around a long time, seen a lot on the security front. Jonathan Carl, we'll see what unfolds in the new year with the new Congress, new House in particular. But what have you heard Republicans saying about what just happened in the lame duck session? I mean, are they going away, I don't know, happy with some of what got done or bamboozled that things got done? What's the word?
Well, this was really like the Roadrunner Congress, and Republicans played the role of Wile E. Coyote, you know, constantly finding themselves on the losing side. And there's a lot of bitterness. I mean, you heard a little bit of it with Lindsey Graham because, you know, he says, okay, you had a great 2 weeks. I acknowledge that, Mr. President. Now look what's going to happen for the next 2 years. And this is a whole new world coming in because not only do you have the Republicans in control in the House, you've got a much narrower majority in the Senate, and, you know, we've seen how hard Harry Reid had over the course of the last 2 years, how hard a time he had when he had 59, even 60 Democrats. Well, you know, now, you know, he's only going to have 54.
But it happened when it happened, including a big health care package for first responders, 9/11 responders. Here's New York's Democratic Senator Chuck Schumer talking after that passage on Wednesday, billions to provide medical aid to those rescue workers.
America. Not Democrats, not Republicans, not New Yorkers, not Wyomingites, rose to the occasion. America almost never lets you down at the end of the day.
And New York Democratic Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, celebrating the same thing, big champion of the bill. Here she is after that 9/11 responders bill passed.
This is the day we've all been working towards and waiting for. Our Christmas miracle has arrived.
Christian, there you go. Sort of the heartstrings tugged by those responders up against that deficit that everybody knows is sitting there. This is more billions.
Yes, but it's not significant relative to the size of the deficit, really. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid it isn't. You know, the deficit is so big that the same applies actually to the earmark debate. So I think we need to be careful about, you know, sometimes it's easier to think about these very specific projects and imagine them in our minds and say, oh, you know, we have to be careful. This has an impact on the deficit. But really, the things that have the impact on the deficit are military spending, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. Those are the biggies. And the deficit is so big that it's really going to only be if you touch those biggies. And then, of course, taxes, right? You know, the only way that we've seen, at least, you know, in the Western developed world, countries actually deal with a big deficit situation as the United States has is paying higher taxes than Americans are paying, especially with the extension of the Bush tax cuts. And actually, with introduction of taxes America doesn't have at all, such as a national value-added tax, a national sales tax.
Stay tuned. We'll see. Jack Beatty, new life for the White House here, or just a little Christmas gift before the rumble of 11?
Well, when you have Charles Krauthammer, the redoubtable conservative, hailing Mr. Obama as the comeback kid, you know you've got a change. You know, just a month ago, people were writing him off, the Democrats off. It may be the end of the Democrats, at least initiating legislation in the Congress, but the president enters the new year with a full tank of gas, it seems to me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news, a raft of legislation from the lame duck, mighty duck Congress. Don't ask, don't tell, repealed, health money for 9/11 responders, a nuclear treaty votes across the aisle in the lame duck that's now headed out. Happy to have with us today Chrystia Freeland, global editor-at-large for Thomson Reuters, and Jonathan Carl, senior political correspondent for ABC News, a terrific correspondent right there on all things congressional. Jack Beatty is with us as well, and you can join us. We were talking about that 9/11 responder. Here's one first responder, John Feel, responding to the passage of that bill, providing medical aid to 9/11 rescue workers. He himself had a bunch of problems after being part of the World Trade Center rescues.
To me, that's better than opening any Christmas present this year. And it's because of everybody's hard work that this Christmas will be the best Christmas that I've ever known.
Well, we hope he doesn't have to use too much of that. But, Jack, there's quite a huge number of responders eligible, I think you've been reading, on this under this bill.
I saw over 60,000, and it frankly surprised me. I didn't realize so many people had participated in that effort, I far be it for me to be skeptical, but I just wonder how that's all going to pan out, and I hope that, and I expect, of course, that all those are legitimate claims, but I was thrown by the number, 60,000 people.
Come one, come all, Americans are desperate to find health care. Some will find it right there. And here on the Don't Ask, Don't Tell front, this is former Air Force Major Mike Almy. He was outed and discharged in 2006 because of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, one of many gay Americans who were celebrating the passage of that repeal this week. He was asked whether or not he plans to re-enlist now that it's been repealed.
I have every intention of that. I'm just ecstatic about today. I can't wait to put the uniform back on as of an Air Force officer, resume my career as an officer and a leader, and work alongside the best men and women serving in our Air Force today.
There's one former serviceman who will be, he says, a serviceman again. Let's get our listeners in here. North Augusta, South Carolina. Ed, thanks for calling. You're on the air, Ed.
Hey, Tom.
Hi.
I feel like the Americans today didn't open their history books because we're going down the same road that Rome went.
Why so, Ed? What's up? Why?
Well, I mean, the same exact thing. You know, whenever we want something, we expect the government to give it to us. Our morals are not important anymore. And I just see the same demise. I just feel like that we're going down that same road and no one sees it.
Where exactly is that showing up to you in this week, Ed?
Well, I mean, on all the issues that you're discussing, we're just, you know, we're just not not paying attention at all. And, you know, the only thing that really holding America together the way I see it is as our support of Israel, and that's it. I'm not putting a bill, and, you know, I won't support immoral things. And
so you're saying no thanks on the don't ask, don't tell repeal? Would you not have extended health care benefits to those 9/11 responders? You think bad idea there?
Well, I mean, we'd like to extend help to everyone, but in my own household, you know, I have to cut back on Christmas. I can't afford everything.
I hear that.
So I expect, you know, if I have to cut back, well, who else is going to have to cut back?
Ed, I appreciate your call, and I wish you the best for the holiday. Jonathan Carl, I want to ask you about what's coming here. There may be more of that attitude. A whole new Congress coming in, a lot of Tea Party folks in there. One of the voices coming in, 39-year-old Mike Lee, senator-elect from Utah. Here's some tape where he's saying he's not taking a government shutdown off the table when they come back to look at budgets and the federal debt limit. Here he is last month in an interview talking about this kind of spending cuts that he wants to see with the new Congress.
I think we're going to have to look at cuts in almost every department and program. You know, perhaps the most straightforward way of going about it would be to look at the last year when our expenditures roughly matched our present-day revenues. Depending on what kind of revenue projections you look at for the coming fiscal years, that could take us back as far as, say, 2004 or something like that.
Roll it back, says Mike Lee, coming in as senator from Utah. Jonathan Carl, you know a little bit of Mike Lee and the point of view that he represents. Tell us about him and what's coming with him in the new Congress.
Yeah, he's going to be a guy to watch. He's, as you mentioned, he's only 39 years old. He's from Utah. He's the guy that toppled Robert Bennett, who seems one of the more conservative members of the Senate, and he managed to run a campaign saying that Bennett was not conservative enough, primarily because he had been a member of the Appropriations Committee, and he had been part of all the big spending, including big spending in Utah. So Mike Lee is son of a former Solicitor General. He's a former Senate page. He's a hardcore Tea Partier in terms of politics, but he knows the system, and he is not going to go along with, you know, he's not going to be the kind of guy that follows orders from Mitch McConnell. One of the interesting things we're going to see, Tom, is the vote that's going to come up probably in March about raising the debt limit.
The federal debt limit for all the borrowing the federal government does. Yeah, and of course, they can't go on without it, given the way we spend.
Yeah, and Mike Lee told me point blank he will not vote to raise that debt limit. We just have to. Now think about what it would take to that. That would mean you'd have to balance the budget immediately. Talk about rolling back. But he's serious about this stuff, and he's not alone. You know, you've got Rand Paul, you have Marco Rubio, you've got Ron Johnson from Wisconsin. You've got a group that's coming in here that, frankly is. Seems to be, and we'll see if they live up to it, but a very different class of Republican than we've seen before.
Is that a fringe, a sideshow, Jonathan, or would they have enough numbers to actually insist on that? Balance the budget right now, period.
It's certainly a minority within the Republican Party in the Senate, but there are enough numbers to really force action. You know, they will join with those that are currently there, like Tom Coburn and Jim DeMint, who have similar views. And you mentioned the 9/11 bill. I mean, Coburn was the guy that stood alone blocking that for a while.
Oklahoma,
his point was, fine, if you want to do this, we can do it, but give me cuts elsewhere. An interesting thing he put forth was, let's cut ethanol subsidies. It's about the same amount. We can do it easily. We can do it right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just cut ethanol subsidies, and you can give all the money you need to your 9/11 responders.
Well, you can make the argument for that, I guess. Christian Phelan, do you see the sort of Euro-style austerity coming in with this Republican House and bigger numbers in the Senate, or just the theater of it?
Well, this is why I was saying that I think that this sort of bipartisan moment we've experienced at the end of 2010 is not a sort of foreshadowing the mood we're going to see in 2011. I think the 2011 mood is going to be hyper-partisan precisely because, as Jonathan was describing, there is going to be a very real, very extreme economic debate. We're going to see the Republican Party driven by these harder line newcomers, but I think the Republican Party overall is going to embrace this point of view, pushing for real austerity. And meanwhile, I think the Democrats are neo-Keynesians. You know, they think what you need in 2011 with the economic recovery still very, very weak, is not to cut back sharply on spending. So that is going to be a real clash, and that, I think, is going to be the central drama of American politics and the American economy next year.
Arlen Specter, Pennsylvania's Democratic senator, gave a farewell address on the Senate floor this Tuesday. Of course, he was a longtime Republican, switched parties last year, then was defeated in a Democratic primary by the more liberal Joe Sestak. Big speech where he, having been a Republican, now slammed the GOP, said there no room left for centrists here.
Republican senators contributed to the primary defeats of Bennett, Murkowski, and Castle. Eating or defeating your own is a form of sophisticated cannibalism.
Sophisticated cannibalism. Jack Beatty, unravel that for us. What's Arlen Specter talking about there?
Well, he is talking about the Mike Castle in Delaware, Lisa Murkowski in Alaska. Republicans went when once they weren't nominated, the Republicans swung right behind the Tea Party candidate who won, and he seemed to be saying that Republican candidates, and I think Republican senators, I think he meant Jim DeMint, were actually raising money for Christine O'Donnell before that primary. The Republican Party has a great opportunity here. It has this enthusiasm behind it. It has this relabeling, I think, as Tea Party and Back to the People and so on. At the same time, it has a big problem in the center. There's a sort of dynamic in American politics that the parties win. They think they have a mandate. They go ahead to fulfill that mandate, which is what their core supporters want. And then independents say, no, we didn't want that. We just want you to work the government and to be bipartisan and not to create great waves or perturbations of change. So you could say the Democrats overplayed that hand in 2008, and the Republicans could easily overplay that hand coming out of the 2010 election and go to their base, give their partisans what they want, and in the process lose the independents.
We'll see soon enough. Let's go to Melba in Charlotte, North Carolina. Melba, you're on the air. Thanks for calling. What do you see?
Yes, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. What do you think?
I think that you guys have it all wrong, because you're thinking that the Democrats actually want to legislate and govern in the next 2 years. And I think they've accomplished way more in 2 years than most congresses and presidents do in four. So they're satisfied.
What, they're ready to take a break now, all done? I mean, what does that mean?
No, they mean they're through governing, and now they can campaign, which is something that they didn't have a chance to do the past 2 years because they were busy governing. And so if the Republicans want to obstruct, which they will, they're not going to get anything through anyway. So this is a good chance for the president to campaign the next 2 years against Republican obstructionism, because he's accomplished most of his wish list.
Melba, we've got the perspective. Jonathan Carl, how about it? So savvy that he's got it all done, and now President Obama can go and campaign. Let me read just up against that. Here's another view online, Jonathan, from a listener. Says, the president touting the tax bill a success. He says he's reminded of the old saw, when you're being run out of town on a rail, act like you're leading a parade. He wasn't so happy. What do you see? Where does it leave Barack Obama, the president?
I think the caller makes a great point, actually. There's no feeling from the White House or from Democrats in Congress that they've got, a big to-do list for the next 2 years. This is all about setting up the stage for the next campaign. The accomplishments of the last 2 years have been historic. Disagree or agree with what they've done, you can't deny that the level of activity, that the magnitude of the legislation that's passed has been historic. I mean, it's Lyndon Johnson style accomplishments. But here's the thing, though: as we prepare for this campaign and the two sides' position, things need to get done. The government, funding the government, dealing with things like you mentioned, like we talked about with the debt limit, dealing with the basics of running government are going to be extremely painful up on the Hill. And, everybody says nobody wants a government shutdown. It's going to be interesting to see how they manage to avoid that kind of conflict.
Here was President Obama on Wednesday, big day, talking about bipartisanship and looking ahead to battles to come in the new year, especially on fiscal and budgetary fronts.
We're still going to have disagreements in terms of spending priorities. It's vital for us to make investments in education and research and development, all those things that create an innovative economy, while at the same time cutting those programs that just aren't working. And there are going to be debates between the parties on those issues. But what we've shown is that we don't have to agree on 100% to get things done.
And they didn't, and they may not. Nashville, Tennessee, Joe is calling. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hello, sir. I actually just wanted to make the comment that I think a lot of people don't realize that Obama just seems to be more of an adaptive pragmatist in that, you know, for the last 2 years, the Democrats have been in control, and he's pushed through a lot of social policy. I think what we'll see here is not him sitting back and resting on his laurels. He realizes that his two predecessors have had Congresses that switched majorities, you know, through their presidency. So we're going to see him compromise a lot more with Republicans in order to get some of his agenda through.
So you see that kind of pragmatic man in the middle? Maybe you may be right. Thanks, Joe. One more here from New York, Schenectady, New York. Beth, you're on the air.
Trying to get this in quickly. The Democrats, I used to volunteer for them and I never will again. They're just the good cop, the Republican bad cop. They instituted don't ask, don't tell. They destroyed the welfare system. And I believe they are doing this to, as a smokescreen. At the same time, Thomson Reuters reporters have been murdered by our own military in helicopters in Pakistan. And the Obama administration pressured Spain to not bring human rights charges against the Bush administration.
So you want a more progressive Democratic Party, more progressive White House, Beth? Is that your gripe?
They're not progressive at all. They're to the right of center. They're very terrifying. They are the richest Congress in 25 years. They only have to get 60%, which is a D for you and I, by the way, 60%. And what they have done is a nightmare. Anybody under 25,000 is going to see a tax increase.
Beth, I appreciate your call. Jack Beatty, what about it? Have the Democrats laid down their arms?
I don't, you know, with all respect to Beth, I don't really see that. I mean, it's just hard to argue with the facts. I mean, 30 million people are going to be insured who weren't, and that's a permanent change in the American safety net. Now, it may not be in the way that Beth would like. I mean, it isn't Medicare for all. It isn't single payer. But it's something. It's something real, and it'll improve life for lots and lots of Americans. And by the way, lower the deficit and lower somewhat our premiums overall. So that's a big achievement. And then other matters, the Fair Pay Act, the banking reform. Again, didn't go far enough. But as far as I think you probably can go within this system. You know, unless we change the system, we can't expect much more than we got. And by change it, I mean take the money out of it.
Jack, speaking of richest Congress, we had some numbers. You had numbers last week that were a little bit off the mark. Let's clarify, correct that right here.
Yes, I made two errors in almost as many words. I was summarizing a Center for Responsive Politics study of congressional wealth. I called it congressional income. I said median income. I should have said median wealth. And I said that the median income of House members was $911,000. In fact, that's the average. That's the median income for both houses. The median wealth for House members is $765,000.
Okay, a little bit different. Not rolling in every year. Still, there. Beth has got it right on one front. There's a lot of money in that Congress. They're not living on $25,000 a year. That's for sure. Jack Beatty, Jonathan Carl, Christian Freeland, please stand by. We're going to come back and look at this economy and whether it's revving up in the world. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. In other news this week, a super rare lunar eclipse on the winter solstice this year. Skygazers in Georgia were sweetly dazzled.
So far, so good.
We are. We're having a great time.
It's been a long time since there's been one. It'll be a long time before another one comes, and I probably won't be here.
On Tuesday night, the University of Connecticut's women's basketball team established a new collegiate record. 89 wins in a row. Top that, men. Here's the call on ESPN.
Connecticut to inbound, and UConn has one up UCLA. 89 consecutive wins, more than anyone in college basketball Division I history.
And word that holiday shoppers this year may be doing a little more shopping.
I think I'm spending a little more this year.
I'm buying funky hats,
ice skates,
boots and jeans, and I found them both.
We're looking at a week in the news with Chrystia Freeland of Thomson Reuters, global editor-at-large there. Jonathan Carl is with us from Washington, D.C., senior political correspondent for ABC News, and a great one. Jack Beatty's with us. Tina, in East Lansing, Michigan. Tina, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I think the Congress did great, and I love the fact that they worked together. How unusual. I really laud the Republicans that, voted with the rest of the Democrats and the president. I do feel really bad about the DREAM Act. I hope they can get back and look at that. And I also want to say that I hope that people are looking for American products when they go shopping. I've been out and about, and it takes a little while to find something made in the U.S. over something made in China. And I know we're in a global economy, and I don't want China to fail, but I want people to look harder at products made in the U.S.
You got to be a real explorer sometimes to find that. What about jobs? You're in Michigan, Tina. What about this Congress on jobs?
Well, I think, I am glad they extended the unemployment for people. I think we need to, again, I've said it before, we try to buy local. We try to buy, Michigan beer. We try to buy Michigan products.
Yeah.
But we try to buy made in USA. I feel terrible about teachers and police that are getting laid off. It's really awful, but I think we as Americans need to buy American products in order for things to come back.
Tina, you're a kind heart and looking out for jobs in your neighborhood there, and I appreciate your call. Chrystia Freeland, what about this economy, this American economy, first of all, at nearing this year's end? What do you see happening?
Well, having been a bit of a Scrooge when it came to bipartisanship reigning next year,
yeah,
I'll be more optimistic when it comes to the economy. Actually, in the past couple of months, when people look at the global economic outlook, what I've been hearing is surprising upside in the U.S. Economists have been taken a little bit by surprise by the U.S. economy, seeming to come back, seeming to get stronger. And if you look at the world economy, it's actually one of the bright spots, particularly compared to Europe, which is looking much weaker. And certainly this tax deal, however you come down on the politics inside it, on, where the burden is shared or not along the U.S. income distribution, its impact immediately in 2011 is going to be stimulative, which should give the U.S. economy a further push. So, relatively speaking, I think the economic outlook right now is brighter than it has been for a little while.
That's going to be music to a whole lot of ears. We hope it filters down to jobs. We've seen big corporate profits and not a lot of jobs. Do you see job growth coming in that brighter prospect, Chrystia?
Well, Tom, your point about corporate profits, I think, is an excellent one. And this is the central dynamic and really, I think, the big question for 2011, because although it may not feel that way to most of us when we look at our household balance sheets, as it were, and when we look at our own employment prospects, and I think even people who have a job are much more anxious about keeping their job than we may have been, 20 years ago. If you look at the corporate side of America, big companies are doing incredibly well. They're making really big profits. Their balance sheets are fantastic. They have these huge cash hoards. And on top of that, they can borrow money practically for free. So the big question is, what is it going to take for big companies to start investing, and investing particularly in the U.S.? And part of the tax deal was designed to try to get at that with tax incentives for investment in new plants and equipment. And we're just going to have to see in 2011 whether that works.
Jonathan Carl in Washington, do you hear Republicans, the White House surely would like that turnaround that Chris is describing. Do you hear Republicans in Washington saying that, you know, they may take some power in the House just in time for the economy to perk up? Are they optimistic on that front?
There's general pessimism, but Krista makes a great point about the tax deal, which is $850 billion, arguably, of economic stimulus.
Yeah.
That's almost $50 billion more than we saw with the economic stimulus bill.
That's huge. So,
and you could argue that it's more purely stimulative. The stimulus bill, a lot of it is long-term, a lot of it went to research and development. There was public policy in there. This is right into the economy through the tax code, right into the economy through unemployment benefits. And, you know, this was, make no mistake, although nobody would use the term, this was seen certainly by the White House as one last attempt to get a major economic stimulus into the economy.
Jack, a trillion here, a trillion there. Maybe that's a shot in the arm. Of course, it leaves the question. President Obama always talks about these structural issues that many have seen underlying economic weakness here. What do you see? Another, in effect, round of stimulus bumping this thing, getting it back in gear, or is it there to be in gear?
Well, I just think that the job picture is going to be just slow. I mean, analysts say that when you have these financial panics, financially led recessions, it's a five year comeback to get back to jobs. That would be 2014 or perhaps even later. And I've heard some people think we're not going to get back to where we were, you know, 5% unemployment for another 10 or 12 years. This is really serious stuff. And I think the politics of unemployment compensation, which used to be pretty clear, both parties were for it. That isn't so now. And there are only so many of these deals you can make. I mean, there are only so many times you can benefit heirs on the one side in order to benefit unemployed people. The budget just won't stretch that far. I do think the president, though, has a chance, and that is to change the subject, and he's hinted at it, to talk next year, as President Reagan did after his re-election in 1984, and more particularly after the Democrats did well in 1986, to tax reform. Lowering rates, plugging loopholes, and trying in that way to inject more dynamism into the economy and perhaps, let's hope, some deficit reduction. He can talk that with Republicans. They seem willing to talk about some version of that.
Let's go. That'll be big if we get there. It would certainly be structural. Daniel in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Daniel, you're on the air.
Hi, I've got some general and specific questions for you. The incoming Congress, I hate to disagree with Kristen, but I'm wondering if they're trying to push their agenda through, if they won't look a little grinchy after all this cooperation. Also wanted to see what you guys thought their chances were on hurting the health care bill. And if the Democrats get a chance, do they have any traction on global warming and a green economy?
Let me ask you, on health care, you mean turning around the health care bill?
Are they going to what do you feel the public mood is now after this spirit of cooperation about their chances on hacking away at that?
Yeah, we'll look at all that. Thanks, Daniel, for your call. Christian, first to you, what about the grinchy optics here? Or will it be the other way when they come back, that they'll be held up to a standard of, you know, budget cutting? Are they going to look grinchy after this moment of bipartisanship if that happens?
You know, I think that what we have to remember if we look back on the past 2 years is how quickly that public sentiment swings, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even if you think about our views, and by our, I mean sort of, you know, the conventional wisdom around the White House and President Obama just in the past 8 weeks. You know, he's gone from being loser to hero to loser to hero.
Yeah.
So I think that it would be a mistake to assume that too much of this sort of moment of peace on earth and goodwill
among
U.S. legislators.
Don't get lost in the holly and the ivy. Yeah.
Reigning. And, you know, as I said, I do think that there is a very clear and actually very deeply held disagreement about the economy, which Jack referred to. You know, this question of how much do you want to pay for the – how much support do you want to give to the weakest people in the economy, extension of unemployment benefit and so on? And to what extent do you believe in this sort of, you know, Reaganomics notion that – tax breaks, even at the very, very upper end of the income distribution, are a good thing? You know, it comes down to what you're hearing from some Republicans right now, that the government doesn't really have a right to tax you. You know, all that money is yours. And if that's your starting point, as opposed to a notion of, you know, society being together and everyone having to contribute for these things that collectively society needs to do, that's a pretty deep ideological divide, and I think we're going to see it played out a lot next year.
Jonathan Karl, what about health care reform in particular? Do you see the possibility of a Republican move to roll back big chunks of that?
I think this is going to be one of the big battles of 2011. The House will early on vote to repeal health care. Whether or not they can actually pass the repeal is almost irrelevant, because obviously it's not going to pass in the Senate, and obviously the president would never sign a repeal of health care into law. But the battle that will matter, and that you will see, I think, throughout the year, is a battle to defund the bill. And we saw it already a little bit with this omnibus spending bill that was that Harry Reid was forced to pull. It only had $1 billion, only $1 billion, to begin implementation of the health care bill. One of the major reasons why Republicans wanted it defeated was because of that. I mean, there was the big battle over earmarks, for sure, but a big part of it was they didn't want to see a dime going to begin to implement the health care bill. And you're going to see that battle, I think, played out throughout the year.
And green economy with the Republicans in the House majority, it didn't go very far with them in the minority. In the majority, what do you see coming, Jonathan?
Well, you know, certainly nothing in terms of a major, you know, we saw cap and trade, all that stuff is dead. But, you know, one of the few areas of potential compromise in the new Congress is going to be energy policy. And you know, you could certainly see some small movement, you know, a bit of a trade-off, you know, more in terms of domestic exploration on the fossil fuel side, on coal, in exchange for some movement in terms of mostly on the tax side, in terms of encouraging alternative energy. But no, I mean, the major opportunity for that is gone for now.
Yep. Let's go to Frank in Cornwall, Vermont. Hi, Frank. Thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. What do you see?
Well, I've been managing businesses in the private sector for the last 40 years, and I'd like to know when the government is going to be held to the same standard that we are. The private sector has let well over 20 million people go in the last few years. The federal government has yet to let the first person go. They constantly tell us that they need more revenue from us.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't manage our businesses and stay in business if we managed our businesses the way the government.
So, Frank, do you expect this new Congress, Frank, to bring about some real downsizing in the government?
I would like to hope that they will, but I'm not optimistic.
So there's the hope from the businessman. I appreciate it, Frank. Judith in New York, Prattsburg, New York. Judith, you're on the air.
Hi. I've been a lifelong Democrat, but I might never vote Democrat again. Until December 31st, we had a Democratic House, a Democratic Senate, and a Democratic president. And I know some things need, you know, the two-thirds majority, but who's happy now? Mitch McConnell. He's very happy. The Republicans are thrilled. What happened to all their talk about adding to the deficit? Now, they voted to give themselves, to continue their tax break, the richest people in the world. We could have used that $900 billion to help fund health care. And for 8 years, these tax cuts, this is my question, the tax cuts didn't seem to create jobs. So what do the economists think that now those same tax cuts are going to create jobs? How will that work?
Yeah, Judith, our time is short here, but Christian Freeland, let me bring that to you. There's the disillusioned Democrats' lament. Where does that go in the new year?
Well, I'd like to respond to Judith and also to a point that Beth, I think a mm-hmm. caller named Beth made earlier today about sort of where the U.S. was in the global economic debate. And just to refer to, I did an interview about 10 days ago with the Canadian Minister of Finance. He is on the right wing of the right wing Canadian Party, okay. the Conservatives, mm-hmm. And represents a right wing community. And I asked him about the tax deal. And unprompted, I just said, so what do you think about the tax deal? And he said, well, you know, overall it'll be stimulative. That's good. But he said, I just don't understand these tax breaks for the rich. There's absolutely no evidence that that is stimulative. No economist will tell you that that is stimulative to the economy because they tend to save their money. They're making enough. And it seems
to me
that
this is a conservative Canadian.
This is a conservative finance mm-hmm. minister whose budget, by the way, is balanced. And he said, you know, and I think that they have a problem with their budget deficit. So I was a little bit mystified. And to me, that was a really telling comment. And it did speak to the extent to which I think the U.S. economic debate is quite out of sync with what you're hearing in other parts of the world.
Maybe that's a good place to leave it for today. And we will see so much more rolling at us in the new year. Hope we can talk with you all again about it when that comes. Christian Freeland with Thomson Reuters, global editor-at-large there. Thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for all your visits with us this year, Christian. Thanks very much.
It's one of the high points of my year. Thank you.
No doubt. Jonathan Carl with ABC News, senior political correspondent in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Jonathan, for being here on Christmas Eve. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Tom. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you. And Jack Beattie, have a great one, my friend. Thank you so much for this and every week, Jack. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Tom. Happy holidays to you.
And so for all those celebrating, Merry Christmas. And for all our warm winter greetings, we have great archive shows coming up next week with Samantha Bee, John McPhee, Aaron Sorkin, Jesse Eisenberg, and more. And we'll be right here for a live year-end wrap-up next Friday on New Year's Eve. Thanks so much for joining us. All the best. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.